Good morning. Our opening words are by Teresa Inez Soto and are titled, Bring Your Broken Hallelujah. Bring your broken hallelujah here. Bring the large one that is beyond repair. Bring the small one that's too soft to share. Bring your broken hallelujah here. I know that people have told you that before you can give, you have to get yourself together. They overstated the value of perfection by a lot, or they forgot. You are the gift. We all bring some broken things, songs and dreams and long-lost hopes, but here and together, we reach within. As a community, we begin again, and from the pieces, we will build something new. There is work that only you can do. We wait for you. And as Mike lights our chalice this morning, I share these words by Laurel S. Sheridan. Take from life its coals, not its ashes. Fan the flames of love and justice. Join hands and hearts in common endeavor, and there will be no limit to what we can achieve together. Our opening hymn is number 1012, When I Am Frightened. It is in your teal hymnals. Please rise in body or in spirit and join in singing. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. My story for all ages is one that may be familiar to some of you. This version is told by Mir Liraz in a book called The 100 Top Inspirational Anecdotes and Stories. So there was once a man who had a little boy that he loved very much, and every day after work he would come home and play with his little boy. He'd spend all his extra time playing together. But one day, when the man was still at work, he realized he had a little extra work to do that evening, and he wouldn't be able to play with his boy. But he wanted to give the boy something to do that was fun and to keep him busy. So looking around his office, he saw a magazine with a large map of the world on the cover, and he got an idea. And he tore off that map from the cover and patiently tore it into very small pieces, and then he put all the pieces in his coat pocket. When he got home, his son came running to him and was ready to play. And the man explained that he had extra work to do, and he couldn't play just now, but he had something special for him to do. And he led the little boy into the dining room and took out the map pieces and spread them on the table and gave him some scotch tape. And he explained that it was a map of the world, and that by the time that the boy finished it, he was sure his work would be done, and they could both play together. And surely, he thought, this will keep my son busy for hours, because there were a lot of small pieces. About 20 minutes later, the little boy came running into the man and said, "Okay, it's finished. Can we play now?" And the man was surprised and said, "That's impossible. Let me see this." And he went out to the dining room, and sure enough, there was the picture of the world, put all together, every piece in its place. Now, does anyone know how he did it? How did this little boy complete the map so quickly? Do you know? Got an idea? What? Choir knows. No, he didn't already have that magazine and copied it. No. What? He looked at the back, right. The boy said, "It was simple. On the back was a picture of a man. When I put the man together, the whole world fell into place." So the message of this story is that when we care about humanity, the whole world can be made right. Our words for prayer or meditation this morning are titled, "We Are Whole" by Beth Lefevre. We are whole. Even in the broken places, even where it hurts. We are whole, even in the places where fear impedes our full engagement with life, where self-doubt corrupts our self-love, where shame makes our faces hot and our souls cold. We are whole, even in those places where perfectionism blunts the joy of full immersion into person, place, activity, where good enough does not reside except in our silent longings, where our gaps must be fast filled with substance, accomplishment, or frenzied activity lest they gape open and disgust. We are whole, where we would doubt our own goodness, richness, fullness, and depth, where we would doubt our own significance, our own profoundness. We are whole, even in our fragility, even where we feel fragmented, alone, insubstantial, insufficient. We are whole, even as we are in process, even as we stumble, even as we pick ourselves up again, for we are whole. We are whole. Blessed be. Amen. Our next hymn is number 1031 in your teal hymnals. This is a traditional Buddhist meditation, and the first verse is directed towards the self, and then the second verse towards others, and the third verse towards everyone. And so I'm inviting you, as you sing it, the first time, really sing it to yourself. With the second verse, when you replace the word I with you, sing it to other people in this congregation around you. And then in the third verse, sing it to all of humanity. please rise in body or in spirit? I actually have two readings this morning, but they're both by Parker Palmer. The first is from Let Your Life Speak. But if I am to let my life speak things I want to hear, things I would gladly tell others, I must also let it speak things I do not want to hear and would never tell anyone else. My life is not only about my strengths and virtues, it is also about my liabilities and my limits, my trespasses and my shadow. An inevitable, though often ignored, dimension of the quest for wholeness is that we must embrace what we dislike or find shameful about ourselves as well as what we are confident and proud of. The second reading is from A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Towards an Undivided Life. Every summer I go to Boundary Waters, a million acres of pristine wilderness along the Minnesota-Ontario border. My first trip years ago was a vacation, pure and simple. But as I returned time and again to that elemental world of water, rock, woods, and sky, my vacation began to feel more like a pilgrimage to me, an annual trek to holy ground driven by spiritual need. Douglas Wood's meditation on the jack pine, a tree native to that part of the world, names what I go up north seeking, images of how life looks when it is lived with integrity. Thomas Merton claimed that there is in all things a hidden wholeness. But back in the human world, where we are less self-revealing than jack pines, Merton's words can at times sound like wishful thinking, afraid that our own inner light will be extinguished or our inner darkness exposed. We hide our true identities from each other. In the process, we become separated from our own souls. We end up living divided lives, so far removed from the truth we hold within that we cannot know the integrity that comes from being what you are. I pay a steep price when I live a divided life, feeling fraudulent, anxious about being found out, and depressed by the fact that I'm denying my own selfhood. The people around me pay a price as well, for now they walk on ground made unstable by by my dividedness? How can I affirm another's identity when I deny my own? A fault line runs down the middle of my life, and wherever it cracks open, divorcing my words and actions from the truth I hold within, things around me get shaky and start to fall apart. But up north, in the wilderness, I sense the wholeness hidden in all things. It is in the taste of wild berries, the scent of unbaked pine, the sight of the northern lights, the sound of water lapping the shore, signs of a bedrock integrity that is eternal and beyond all doubt. Thus ends the reading. Our church is made whole by the voluntary generosity of those who come and join with us and give of their gifts, both financial and physical and spiritual, to make this church run. To talk more about this month's plate sharing agency, I'm going to invite forward Vicki Tabor. And as she comes up, I'm going to tell you that the song that the choir is singing next is inspired by 14th century Christian mystic Julian of Norwich's words, "All will be well." And all will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Good morning. I'm Vicki Tabor, and I'll be reading this report written by my husband, Bob. For 15 years, since the devastating tsunami of 2004, this congregation's efforts have been making an incredible difference in the lives of children and entire villages in India. With support from FPC and other individuals and organizations, we are supporting children at Wide Orphanage. Over 45 families from FPC contribute children's vitamins and friendship kits, consisting of writing materials, crayons, crafts, games, and toys, for over 70 children. Vicki Tabor, Joe and Kara Holmes, and Russ Hart have accompanied Bob on the annual journey to orphanages and participated in distributing the children's vitamins and friendship kits. We donated over $10,000 to Wide Orphanage and NGOs for projects in 2018, early 2019. We reclaimed scrub land for a Dalit village and converted it into productive organic farming, funded a tailoring program teaching women to use foot treadle sewing machines. Upon completing the program, the women received new sewing machines to earn a living for their families. We funded micro-lending projects that have created jobs for women, offering them dignity and the opportunity for their family to rise out of poverty. Over $17,000 has been dedicated to these ongoing micro-lending programs. This year, we contributed to our growing pool of funds used for micro-lending to women's self-help groups to start small enterprises, an organic seed bank, dairy herds, and a tailoring business. Over the years, we have built first toilets in villages, bore wells for potable water, built preschools so children can receive daycare, a healthy meal, and education, allowing mothers to work and add to the family's meager sustenance. 100% of the funds donated go directly to these worthy projects. Thank you for your generous support of the East India Foundation, which continues to make a great difference in the lives of children and entire villages. I'll be at coffee hour if anybody has any questions.
If you remember last week, I shared a meditation about a bricklayer by Meg Barnhouse. That's the same author who wrote that anthem, multi-talented woman. If every minister has a kernel to their theology, some kernel to their message that they preach over and over again, it's said that we all only have one sermon, really. We just tell it in different ways. The core of my theology is this message that you are whole, you are worthy, you are loved. And I preach it in different ways. You'll hear it many different ways over the years, but today I'm talking about wholeness. To start with, let me talk about the opposite of wholeness, which is division. And in this case, we're talking about division within ourselves. Parker Palmer, the spiritual writer, gives several examples of how we can live divided lives. For example, making our living at jobs that violate our basic values, even when our survival does not demand it. Or remaining in relationships or settings that steadily kill off our spirits. Or hiding our beliefs from those who disagree with us or avoid conflict, challenge, and change. We're concealing our true identities for fear of being criticized, shunned, and attacked. For Unitarian Universalists, one of the sources of our brokenness is often our sense of isolation and distance from this culture we live in, this culture permeated with violence. This year, the epidemic of gun violence has continued unabated, and not just in this country, but this world. In our country, children continue to be divided from their parents by our government. Trans people continue to have their lives attacked by our government. We continue economic systems of oppression that leave the poor poorer, leave students strapped with debt, leave all of us fighting for affordable health care. Our very lives are at stake in so many ways. In a culture that is broken and continues to be broken, not the least example of which is the way in which we continue to break our very earth. An example of this culture of violence that has stuck with me for several years was a rape case in 2015 on a college campus, where the rapist's lawyers argued that the young man was not to blame because, quote, the assault was caused by a campus culture of sexual freedom, promiscuity, and excessive alcohol consumption. That quote stood out to me. It stood out as an example of how our system is so very broken that even those perpetrating violence in the system then turn around and blame how broken the world is that led them to that moment. Now, certainly, we are not the first generation to see our world as fractured. As I studied in graduate school, the modernist writers and artists saw the fracturing of the world in their age, too. Think of Picasso's Cubism, a world broken and strange. This is the world that T.S. Eliot writes of in The Wasteland, which he begins by saying, April is the cruelest month. In it, he says, a heap of broken images where the sun beats and the dead tree gives no shelter, the cricket no relief, and the dry stone no sound of water. Only there is shadow under this red rock. Come in under the shadow of this red rock, and I will show you something different from either your shadow at morning striding behind you or your shadow at evening rising to meet you. I will show you fear in a handful of dust. In the world that has fallen apart, when our very selves are divided against themselves, the work of faith is, as it's put in Judaism, tikkun olam, to repair the world. Our work is to dive into the wreck, to paraphrase and steal from Adrienne Rich, or as she says in Natural Resources, to reconstitute the world. How do we join? How do we unite that which is divided? There are as many answers as there are people in this room and more beyond. One way is through spiritual practices, such as solitude. Other spiritual practices include the contemplative spiritual practices in many traditions, prayer, meditation, etc. The Taoist leader Chuang Tzu gave us an example of how we can find internal integration in his parable of the master woodcarver. In it, the master carver king is summoned to the palace to make a bell stand. And it was amazing. And everyone who saw this bell stand was astounded. And the Prince of Lu asked him his secret. And King's response was that when he first began to think about the work, he first fasted. Then he says, "I fasted in order to set my heart at rest. After 3 days fasting, I had forgotten gain and success. After 5 days, I had forgotten praise or criticism. After 7 days, I had forgotten my body with all its limbs. By this time, all thought of your highness and of the court had faded away. All that might distract me from the work had vanished. I was collected in the single thought of the bell stand. Then I went to the forest to see the trees in their own natural state. And when the right tree appeared before my eyes, the bell stand also appeared in it, clearly, beyond doubt. All I had to do was put forth my hand and begin, and if it were not for this particular tree, there would not have been any bell stand at all. What happened? My own collected thought encountered the hidden potential in the wood. From this live encounter came the work which you ascribe to the spirits." So the path to wholeness involves searching for that inner, still, small voice. Parker Palmer writes, "Thomas Merton called it the true self. Buddhists call it the original nature or big self. Quakers call it the inner teacher or the inner light. Hasidic Jews call it the spark of the divine. Humanists call it identity and integrity. In popular parlance, people often call it soul." Palmer continues, "The soul wants to keep us rooted in the ground of our own being, resisting the tendency of other faculties like the intellect and ego to uproot us from who we are. The soul wants to keep us connected to the community in which we find life, for it understands the relationships are necessary to survive. The soul wants to tell the truth about ourselves and the world and the relationship between the two, whether that truth is easy or hard to hear. The soul wants to give us life and wants us to pass that gift along, to become life givers in a world that deals too much death." "These fragments I have shored against the ruins," T.S. Eliot writes bleakly. Part of the path of integration and wholeness is indeed shoring up your fragments. When people come to me with spiritual crisis, with spiritual struggles and needs, I can't solve the root problem most of the time. But what I can do is talk to them about what their support network is. What are the sources of strength that they can pull up around them, shore against their ruins as they face this struggle, whatever that crisis may be? What are their sources of community, those loved ones around them who give them strength? And of course, religious community, this community, is one of those pieces most times. Palmer writes, "The path is too deeply hidden to be traveled without company. Finding our way involves clues that are subtle and sometimes misleading, requiring the kind of discernment that can happen only in dialogue." Now, not just any community enables us to live into wholeness, to live with integrity. Your bridge club, your country club, your bowling league may or may not be that source of strength for you. Parker Palmer says we need communities that are circles of trust. Circles of trust are built because of a long history sometimes of shared experience, like in a family. Those families that are trustworthy and loving places, those are often the sources of our greatest strength. Other groups of friendship and groups like clubs can become sources which have a trust circle within them when you've lived through shared experiences together and learned and grown that trust together. Religious communities have a framework built into them that enables trust to happen more quickly sometimes for our newcomers when they come here, because we have a covenant that we establish in how we will live together. We have values and principles that we set forth about what we believe the right way to live in community is. So here are two visuals for understanding spiritual integration. The first is a Mobius strip, that strip where if you trace along it, your path covers both the inside and the outside before coming back to where you started. Most of us separate our inner and outer lives. We're like a circle, a paper ring, any kind of ring, where what is on the outside is what everyone sees, and what is on the inside is what they don't. But if you open that circle and twist it and close it again, you get the Mobius strip, where the inside and outside are one continuing loop. This is spiritual integration. What do you keep on the outside that you are protecting from the inside, or vice versa? How can those become more integrated in your life? An example of this, I think, comes from Linda Susan Ulrich, a UU minister, who tells in the UUA's series that you can subscribe to online called Wiser Braver, this story of visiting friends and their 5-year-old son. One of my last nights, she writes, all 4 of us ate dinner together. The food was delicious, the conversation lively. I felt again how much I'd missed them. And then, out of the blue, the 5-year-old turned to me and said, matter-of-factly, "You're fat." There was an astonished silence. His parents quickly admonished him to apologize. Time slowed down. In the brief space between his statement and my reply, I remembered everything I'd endured about my weight. Peers at school who would moo at me in the hallways or tell me I had my own gravitational field. People who acted insulted at the notion that I might have a crush on them. The constant diets my mom imposed. Doctors who could see nothing else about me. Internalized self-hatred that led me to, among other things, refuse graham crackers and kindergarten because they had too many calories. This little boy's words touched old, tender wounds. But by the time I took a breath, I decided to try something different. "That's right," I said. "I am fat. Just like your dad is tall and you're short and your mom has red hair. Isn't it cool how bodies come in all sorts of shapes and sizes?" Alex and his wife immediately picked up on what I was doing and chimed in with other examples. By reclaiming the word fat as an adjective rather than an accusation, I didn't just teach a kindergartner about the beautiful variations among human bodies. I reminded myself that my tender places are a source of strength. A second image, this one of fractals that comes from Richard Rohr. He writes, "This insight is also affirmed by Mandelbrot's discovery of fractals, the repetitive and imitative patterns found in nature, mathematics, and art. We literally see that the part contains the whole or replicates the whole, and yet each part still has a wholeness within itself. We now believe that such wholeness is true physically, biologically, and spiritually, and can even be seen as a basis for understanding mystical union. Each of us replicates the whole, and yet has a certain wholeness within ourselves. But we are never entirely whole apart from the connection with the larger whole. Holons create a very fine language for what I call the mystery of participation, for understanding how holiness transmits and how God's life is an utterly shared phenomenon." This leads me briefly to Marianne Williamson's book, Healing the Soul of America. Williamson argues that we can transform spiritual activism into social activism, and that the principles that apply to our personal healing and our personal integrity also apply to social healing. She says, "For years, I thought I only had to heal myself and the world would take care of itself. Clearly, we must work on healing our own neuroses in order to become effective healers. But then, having worked on our own issues for a while, another question begs for an answer. How healed can we ultimately become while the social system in which we live and move and have our earthly being remains sick? Having wholeness in our culture is hard. How can we have wholeness and at the same time disconnect from a culture of violence? The answer is actually that we don't. We have to stay connected to and focused on the healing of our culture. We can't separate it like inside and outside. We have to balance our isolation and our connectedness, our solitude and our group. Wendell Berry writes of this paradox of wholeness in The Art of the Commonplace, saying, "We come to the paradox that one can become whole only by the responsibility of accepting one's partiality." Finding wholeness in this world is difficult. It's a lifelong effort. I conclude with Mae Sarton's words from her poem, "I Become Myself." And those literary-minded among you may notice that it is an answer to the poem Andrew Marvel's "To His Coy Mistress." Then she reflects those images throughout it. If you're not literary-minded enough to know what that means, don't worry about it. It's not important to the sermon. "Now I become myself. It's taken time, many years, and places. I have dissolved and shaken, worn other people's faces, run madly as if time were there, terribly old, crying a warning. Hurry, you'll be dead before. What? Before you reach the morning? Or the end of the poem is clear? Or love safe in the walled city? Now to stand still, to be here, to feel my own weight and density, the black shadow on the paper is my hand, the shadow of a word as thought shapes the shaper, falls heavily on the page, is heard. All fuses now, falls into place, from wish to action, word to silence, my work, my love, my time, my face gathered into one intense gesture of growing, like a plant, as slowly as the ripening fruit, fertile, detached, and always spent, falls, but does not exhaust the root. So all the poem is, can give, grows in me to become the song, made so and rooted by love. Now there is time, and time is young. Oh, in this single hour I live, all of myself, and do not move. I, the pursued, who madly ran, stand still, and stop the sun." May you find wholeness. May you find peace. May you be peaceful and at ease. May we all be whole. Our closing hymn is number 1021, "Lean on Me." It's a song about leaning on your friends and neighbors when you need a little help. So please stand in body or in spirit.
If we are wise, we know that there's hope.
Our closing words are by Kathy Huff. Our time in this place may have ended, but our connection to each other and this community remains. Together, may we walk the path of justice, speak words of love, live the selfless deed, trod gently on the earth, and fill the world with compassion. Until we meet again, blessed be.